Thundergrunt.
Guys, how you doing?
Hey, Bob.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, introduce yourselves.
I'm Jimmy George. I am a full-time script consultant and a screenwriter.
I am Jamie Nash, screen scribe.
Yes.
And I'm Bob Rose. I'm a podcaster, filmmaker, person thing.
All around awesome dude.
I'm just somebody that's floating out in the ether,
with
waffling my way through
hair.
Life.
Secret just weapon.
Gorgeous, beautiful eyes and hair.
Dude,
that's all it
hair.
Is. Today we're going to talk about a 14-year-old classic.
Yeah.
Brad Bird's The Incredibles.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah.
The end.
It's essentially perfect. We don't need to say anything.
Yeah, that's okay. It. Thanks for listening.
I thought you were setting up like Cabin Boy or something.
Yeah, I was like, that'd be awesome. I mean, I love Cabin Boy. You guys want to
do
a Cabin Boy episode?
Do a Cabin Boy.
It's coming
break
out on Blu-ray, so it's relevant again.
Cabin Boy.
I'll break down Cabin Boy, but we're going to talk about The Incredibles, Cabin Boy aside for right now.
Okay.
this is I would say maybe the most notable Pixar movie of all the very notable Pixar movies.
What do you think?
I feel like
Toy Story seems kind of.
You think Toy Story?
That
Toy seems
Story,
like the first,
I would say,
but.
I'd say Toy Story because it's got three movies.
Yeah.
Not that
this
is much
may end
of a
up having three movies.
Do you think that's the movie that people associate the most with Pixar?
I do.
Okay.
It's almost like the Mickey Mouse of Pixar in some ways.
Maybe the superhero boom has jaded my eyes.
Well,
to,
yeah, that's
you know,
true.
Because The Incredibles is always pointed
before
this.
Yeah, yeah.
And it feels like The Incredibles is like being pointed at all the time. Like, that was the perfect superhero movie.
Yeah.
They did it already, and we're
right.
We just keep going with it, you know?
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah. That's a good call.
What did what was the box office on The Incredibles, Jamie?
Why do I always drop this off right before you say it?
I
know. It's so here it is. It's $633 million. Worldwide.
And that's 14 years ago.
So not including inflation. Wow.
Yeah.
So it's a bona fide blockbuster.
It's a bona fide blockbuster.
That's why we're talking
classic.
About it. Yes.
All around perfect piece of writing.
Oh my gosh.
But we're going to talk about why this movie.
Yeah. Why this movie, Jamie?
Yeah, Jamie,
why
tell
this,
us why this movie.
Why are we talking about this movie?
Yeah.
The Incredibles? I find this movie is one of the probably perfect teaching tools. Like, if you want to learn basic screenwriting, it's all there. It's got character arcs. It's got theme. It's got gags. It's got structure. It's got it all. I think, and I truth be told, I think any Pixar movie,
mm-hmm.
I haven't seen the dinosaur one.
Neither have I, The Good Dinosaur.
I really enjoy The Good Dinosaur. It's kind of not as loved, but
I
really enjoy
it. The Cars sequel,
I
don't think I
saw.
I didn't see
any
of the Cars sequel.
They are excellent teaching tools in general. I mean, you can't go wrong with Finding Nemo, Up,
Wall-E,
Toy Story, Wall-E. All of these movies have like impeccable structure, great character arcs. Every single lesson in screenwriting is in them. I think a large part of it is because of the way they're made.
Yeah.
They have time to perfect the story.
Years.
It's all about the story.
It's about five years per movie.
God, five years.
And it's not like they go into post-production. They're always in storytelling mode. So, you know, they can change things out. They can swap things in. They're constantly changing the story as they go. So they're constantly being rewritten.
Also, give them a little credit. I mean, there's terrible animated movies that aren't written well.
Yes.
That take 5 years. Yeah. I'm just saying, like, DreamWorks is a hit or miss.
And there's no excuse because they have all the time.
Yeah, Pixar didn't invent the process
of how animated
films are made.
Yeah.
You're right. So,
and they're all relatable, so that's another thing. They always choose like relatable, like what's this movie? This movie's about like marital drama, family drama, personal discovery.
Yeah.
You know, it's all like stuff. Even though they're superheroes, they make it very personal and relatable. They tend to do that.
They seem to be one of the first ones that kind of hit on these stories that were as much for adults as they were for kids.
Oh, definitely, yeah.
I mean, this is a movie with death, murder, I mean, there's a lot of adult themes in this, you know.
Definitely.
Yeah. Like, they kill people at the end.
They kill people.
Yeah. It's like, straight up, it's not even a question.
I mean, the beginning gag, there's a suicide in the beginning gag.
I know.
Yeah, it's a suicide. Yeah, in the prologue.
Good call.
Yep.
Which is, I haven't watched this in about 5 years, and I watched again for this podcast. And when the suicide came up, I was like, oh, whoa. Right.
Yeah.
This, wow.
Yeah, this wasn't playing around.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, anyway, this movie is Brad Bird.
Yeah, Brad Bird.
His history is, I'm trying.
Iron Giant.
Amazing Iron Giant. Stories.
Amazing Stories.
He wrote two episodes of Amazing Stories. One of them, my favorite.
Oh yeah, that's right. Batteries Not Included.
Yeah, and he wrote Batteries Not Included, which I fucking love.
The Simpsons. Worked on The Simpsons.
Yeah,
directed a couple episodes.
Yeah.
Sideshow
Did
Bob.
Really?
Yep.
That's awesome.
Some of the best Simpsons episodes. Yeah. Iron Giant,
which wasn't a commercial hit, but
right.
critically acclaimed. Yeah.
It's
become
beloved.
A classic.
I mean, yeah. Ready Player One, it wouldn't have used that if it wasn't a beloved movie, right? Yeah. Yeah.
And he said they brought him in. So this is on the Incredibles extras. This was illuminating to me. After all their success, they felt like Pixar was getting complacent. Like the people in Pixar, John Lasseter felt like their storytelling was getting complacent. Despite all that success. And so they brought him in to shake things up.
God, when you're at Pixar, to say we're getting complacent.
We need to,
maybe that's
we need
why
to,
they're Pixar.
We need to shake things up, And he then built his own team based around what he wanted to do with this movie. And
if I remember, he brought a lot of the 2D animators in. So
they were all learning at the same time.
Yeah,
because
he wanted all that flexibility that you have in 2D animation. With all the cost saving and visuals, you know, awesomeness of the 3D.
So they're all learning on the fly, which is just crazy to think
and
about
learning through conflict in some ways. Like both sides challenging each other, just like any good screenplay.
Man, it was shocking to me to learn about the... So I had heard a lot about how the old school animated movies were based on the artists were the ones dictating the story. And then they figured out, based on all the things that the artists would come up with, then they would craft the movie around whatever the best was left from that.
Right.
And it sort of seems like they've kept part of that. They've kind of meshed it with the standard that Pixar has set with their storytelling, like script first.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So I did not know that when he would write a page, like they talk about how he would write pages and then he would bring it to the story department.
Right. Yeah. So there's it's interesting.
That was crazy to me.
There's a good book called Creativity Inc. Mm-hmm. If you ever want to check
it out. I've
heard
of it and never read it.
Really good book about the process of creativity. I don't know that it even outlines the stuff you're talking about can be found on YouTube. There's some great YouTube videos on the making of Pixar and things like that. What you described, though, there's this whole thing called the brain trust.
Okay.
At Pixar.
Now, would you say this is indicative of if somebody out there is aspiring to write animated movies, would you say their expectations ahead of time would be to expect this as part of their process, even if they're trying to write a script?
So generally, the idea, if you want to be an animated screenwriter, or if you want to be somebody that writes Pixar films...
Which is a different beast than just being a screenwriter.
Which is a different beast.
Okay, I just want to point that out.
That's what I'm asking.
A lot of people probably don't
know
that.
You have more insight into this than myself.
Generally, the advice is... Don't do it. it's been that way for years. And it's basically because the animators typically want to write their own stuff.
And that's what it seemed like to me when I was learning about this process.
Brad Bird wrote his own stuff. Now, we've seen Michael Arndt came into Toy Story 2, and I think Josh Whedon was on Toy Story 1.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's all kinds of people they bring in now. But it's typically... They're established screenwriters from completely different sides of the world that they bring in to bring some emotion or something. They're not looking, like, let's say you're writing The Incredibles. They're not looking for people that write superhero movies. They're looking for people that write family or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, that's who they're looking
for. Maybe even comedy.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Because the animators actually write the films as they make them.
Work out the art. Yeah.
Because the animators are really the actors, they're the artists, they're the cinematographers, they're everything. So they like to control that. And I've been involved in a couple different animated
films. That's why
I
asked you. Yeah, I know.
It's funny. I've been involved in two different things. Neither project ever got to the finish line, or one didn't get to the finish line with me. I think it's still out there.
Was one that Smurfs like thing?
It was.
I remember.
Well, that one was a live action. So it was a live action mixed with the animation.
Okay.
There are two others. I won't name them.
Oh, because
one of them's out there. But it was one of these things where they brought me in to work on the story, but I was working on it with a lot of other people.
Okay.
And the thought was, I remember they were going to fly me out to when they started producing the story reels, which are like animatics.
Yeah.
And that was a large part of the writing process. So the way these films are typically made, and Pixar as well, is, you know, they might write a screenplay of some sort. In Pixar, they bring it to the Brain Trust, mm-hmm. which is it's like an all-star team of all their directors and producers.
Yeah.
And they give feedback, and then you keep rewriting it and rewriting it.
They workshop it.
Then they might actually go to, I'm not sure if Pixar does this, but they might actually go to like a storyboard process.
That's what they did on the, there's some extras of him bringing just pages. Sketches. Like right out of finishing the pages. And then they acted out. They would decide on what they liked about it being, they would pitch him, the story department, the storyboard creators would pitch him Rises and Falls based on his pages. Here's what we want to do creatively with what you've given us, which was fascinating to me.
Okay. So
this is all on the DVD.
This is all on the extras.
And,
yeah. Okay.
And this is common to all forms of animation, which you just said. So usually there's like a storyboard.
I had heard of that before.
And I, you know, some of the people I worked with, and this was really interesting for another project, is when they pitch me the story idea to be the writer on their film, like they already had like a treatment. They did it by showing me pictures. It was like a picture book. Like they sat there and talked to me and they'd show a picture, you know, here's this character in its natural habitat, next picture. And then this thing happens, next picture.
So many ideas are already planned out.
They have the characters, they're showing you little scenes, action, the way the action's
You're not building
look.
That world. You're writing within the world?
It depends on the project. But in that particular one, they had already had like a treatment and they were bringing me in to kind of put it together or put the pieces together.
Okay.
And then on top of that, so then let's say you get through that phase, then they go to like an animatic phase. And the animatic tends to be visual storyboards. They turn those storyboards into movies. So they might put some After Effects things in them. And Pixar does an awesome job of this.
Yes.
I've had a couple of my things turned into animatics and they weren't so great of jobs. In fact, they were pretty bad. But if you look at Pixar's, they're almost...
They look exactly like the finished product
they're fun
without
to watch.
The texture.
They're fun to watch. And I found one recently, the Incredibles one on YouTube. It was probably one of the extras from the DVD.
And it's on there. It's great.
It was amazing. It was amazing. And it shows some alternate paths. Like there's a completely different ending for The Incredibles and stuff like that. They show that whole thing to the Brain Trust. And it's like a 2-hour movie.
Yeah.
And then the Brain Trust gives notes on it. Like, we don't like that ending. Switch to this. And a lot of time, like, the director's doing the scratch track and things like that. In fact, that's how Edna Mode or whatever came to be. Is Brad Bird was doing the scratch track and they never... quite got anybody up to speed. But anyway, so they give a full round of story notes for that. They revise it. They keep doing that. And then it goes to like 3D skeletal versions of that.
And then they're naked. They're naked. They're just skeletons.
Yeah, right.
Or some of them will just be wearing like one set of clothes that don't make sense or something like that. They do that kind of thing. Whatever shortcut they have that they can project the whole movie on. And then there's another round of story notes.
Yeah.
So you can see there's just story note after story note after story note.
So from a writing standpoint, somebody out there, because I think this, I had heard all this, I knew all this, and yet I had forgotten. And then when I was watching all the extras, I was like, wow, this is
it's more than just the writer. It's not just some singular vision.
Yeah. So would you, as somebody who's been involved in a couple of these, because I think that I have friends and clients who specifically want to write animated movies. That's the path they want to go on. Would you say it kind of makes the most sense to go like the micro budget filmmaker route and like find a team of animators to help you bring your vision to life? If that's the alternative, like what would you suggest?
Yeah, that sounds
low
like
budget animation. I mean, that's
rough.
Like the.
I know.
I'm gonna answer for Jamie. Don't do that.
Don't do that.
Just make a movie if you're gonna make a movie, but don't do low budget animation. My God.
Yep, my balls sucked inside myself just hearing
you
say that.
Yeah,
it's like horrible.
Go look up a movie called Food Fight. Have you ever seen that? Starring with Charlie
said
Sheen.
My balls sucked up inside of my head.
Horrible.
Look, I'm trying. Well, I don't want to crush.
That's like the thing you click on Amazon Prime. You're like, nope. Like,
I don't
want to
crush the dreams of anybody out there.
No, crush them. So, save them the time.
So don't write one.
I have no advice for the aspiring animation writer.
Yeah,
I really don't. It's unfortunately. I would say nobody knows anything. Probably just write your animation screenplay and roll the dice.
See what happens.
That would be my advice.
See if you can get your foot in the door.
I'm going to say the most cliche thing, but a good script's a good script.
Yeah.
I mean, just write it. Having it made, animation needs money. That's just, there's not really, you're not going to bend on that fact.
Yeah, unless you're the animator, and that would be the different.
Well, there's great YouTube animators, and they spend like 6 years doing their own movies.
Or like South Park or something.
South Park would be fine. Yeah. Right.
But okay. I don't know. I think they should just write their movie. And one of the things Brad Bird said, maybe it's not Brad Bird, the Pixar guys, is animation isn't a genre. So just write a good movie. You know.
Yeah, they said that they had talks about doing this live action.
Yeah,
write
The Incredibles. Don't worry about whether it's animated or not.
I think that's the best advice. Don't seek out.
In fairness, though, what you're saying though is the way that the process worked here. It doesn't sound like it's just not somebody at a keyboard,
right? And that's something that
Pixar wrote,
right?
The movie,
and that's something that needs to be made clear,
right?
About
that's
your
what we're
aspirations,
trying to impress, right?
Yes,
but here is the thing: they do hire I don't want to give false hope.
No,
they do hire big time screenwriters to come in and actually write the screenplay at some point.
Yeah,
they will do that, or Brad Bird will write it himself.
Right, which he did.
He's a big time screenwriter.
Exactly. So they do bring people in. The strange thing also about Pixar and animation in general, it's not governed by the WGA.
Wow.
Yeah, at all.
Really?
At all. Zero governance by the WGA. So you can get paid. In fact, I just listened to a podcast the other day where the writer of Beauty and the Beast, the original Beauty and the Beast, it was on Script Notes. She said like how much money she made from Beauty and the Beast. And I can't remember, but I think it was like $35,000 total. And that was like it.
From
like that
Disney,
was it.
The big Disney movie.
Yeah, because there's no residual protection or anything like that. And even though it's been turned into a play and all this
remade and everything,
she got no. Whereas if it was a live action, she would have gotten residuals from
all
of those
things
and lots of residuals over time. I think they said they did give her like $100,000 bonus at some point, like after the movie made a lot of money,
right.
They wrote her a check.
Yeah.
Don't sue us.
Yeah. So if you write for animation, there's no, it's actually another guild actually. There's a whole complicated reason why it's not governed by, which we won't go into.
I think all of this is fascinating.
Yeah. But
and it's relevant.
It's totally different than everything we've talked about on this podcast.
It's relevant.
It's a completely different process.
Yeah. And at the end of the day, you don't have any credit protection. They decide who the credits are. And a lot of times they put like additional story by in animation that they do not do in live action, and the animators will get credit for some of that
I've noticed that
so and that's why you only see that on animated films. You don't see it on any live action because they're not governed by the union at all. The one thing I will say, the funny experience I had, I remember one time when I went to one of these animation studios, and the culture was so different. So they were calling out, like, remember when Woody Woodpecker did this? Blah, blah, blah. Remember that episode of Bugs Bunny?
Yeah.
And I could not keep up with them. It was like, kind of like how we would talk about movies.
Yeah.
They talked about individual episodes of Popeye or something.
Well, there's a reason they're there.
Yeah.
I mean, right?
Yeah.
And
they knew it all. They had an encyclopedia. Like, that's how they talked to each other. And I wouldn't be able to talk that
So
language.
They would communicate creative decisions based on those classics.
Yeah, like we need a William Fletcher, you know, and I'd be like, I don't know what that means.
Right.
You know, like, but they would know. And so there's a whole different culture and love and passion that they bring to it. That was kind of fascinating when
that
I met them.
That is interesting.
It kind of gave me some weird energy, you know. It was like, this is good energy that I hadn't had before.
Break out the Warner Brothers cartoons.
I got to imagine if that's what that's like at whatever studio you're talking about, that Pixar, it's got to be.
It was a really small studio.
All right, but I'm saying at Pixar, that passion has got to be like tenfold, right?
Yeah.
I mean, because
now a lot of the small animation studios too, I mean, what they do is cut scenes for video games. Like, that's what they know. They're like, it's like this from the video game, blah, blah, blah. And they, you know.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah.
But That small place aside, we're talking about
Pixar Incredibles.
And the thing that we're gonna discuss, not in full, about Pixar, is the 22 rules of storytelling.
Right.
In concordance with The Incredibles.
Yes.
Right? That's what we're going to talk about.
Yeah, the 22 rules, it was something that came out a few years ago, and I think people thought they were actually, like, Moses's right. Ten Commandments.
I,
coming
I,
down
I
from Pixar.
Legitimately thought that.
Yeah, so did I.
Stone tablets.
It was only yesterday that it was crushed when I realized it was just a bunch of tweets.
Yeah,
me too.
I
dude.
Didn't realize that.
Yeah, you yes. crushed it for me.
So it's not a Bible. It's just kind of like,
I think it was an editor who just kind of said, "Hey, from the time I worked at Pixar, here are some 22 cool things I picked up."
It wasn't released like in a book form or on the website. It's not like. The official. Yeah, no, it's not.
Not at all.
But if I'll put a link on the
yeah, I think that
on this
be great.
Episode's page on thundergrunt.com.
They're all very intuitive.
You can find.
We thought we'd use them as discussion points because they're good.
They are good.
The 22
rules.
Oh, yeah, they're not bad. I just thought they were like, we've been following these like the Bible.
Originally,
you know?
That's what I thought. Yeah. But and also just a reminder, you know, whenever we talk about rules, they're tools. They're not rules. They're just additional little things you can remember when you're trying to solve a problem when creating your story, you know?
Cause that's know the rules and then break them.
Yeah. Tools, not rules.
Yeah.
Tools, not rules. Exactly.
And Jimmy wanted to say that.
Yes, I did. Very
good. Because it rhymes too.
Oh, because, so. Well, because people, rules. I mean, Bob, I'm sitting in front of you. You're the guy.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Rules are stupid.
Rule breaker.
Well, you got to know them, though.
Yeah, no, you do.
If you're just a new formed baby that landed on planet Earth and started writing a screenplay, I can't even imagine
what structure.
That is. Right. Anyway, what rules, what are the ones that pop out as far as these 22 that for
so,
you guys?
I think piggybacking off of the process that we were just talking about, and a lot of the, like Jamie was talking about how a lot of the rules are process based and not the actual writing, Invisible Ink. Mm-hmm. Is rule number 12, discount the first thing that comes to mind and the second and the third and the fourth and the fifth and get the obvious out of the way. Surprise yourself. So that,
I think that's one that's hard to teach.
Yeah.
It's one that
it just almost seems like creativity.
It's like talent, you know, it really is. And, but I do think you can circumvent it by forcing yourself to circumvent it. I always talk about story ideas in this way. A lot of people only have one story idea, and they come to me and they're like, I got this one idea. And I always challenge them to come up with 100 ideas. So I'm like, I'm not sure if it's good or not, but I bet if you come up with 100 ideas and it's still your favorite idea, it's probably pretty good.
Yeah.
And I think the same is true with not just story concepts, but beats of your story. Mm-hmm. So what's your midpoint going to be? Come up with 5 different ideas.
Yeah.
Names for characters. Like one thing in The Incredibles, it has all these great names.
Oh,
like,
yeah, they
like,
really do.
What's the Bob No Man Is an Island? You know,
Gazer
No
Beam.
Gazer Beam.
Gazer
Beam.
Frozone.
Dynamo.
And you can,
is it right? It was,
And you can see that whole Pixar process.
Mm-hmm.
Like a bunch of super smart creative people just pouring over something and adding.
And there were
to
probably
it.
500 names. And they went over it like this list says. 5th, 6th, 7th, they went
Frozone.
Over
I mean,
over.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
That was not a, if somebody just walked in a room and said, hey, Frozone,
but
I'd
see,
be
that's what, like,
right?
I know you guys agree
it's
with
probably
me. That's
Ice Guy.
Ice Dude.
Don't settle for Ice Guy. Frozone.
That's what we love about the movies are those little details that we take out of the things, like Frozone.
And especially with The Incredibles, because it's a superhero universe. Everything's been done in the superhero universe. Maybe not back when The Incredibles was made.
It's also a self-aware.
It is.
It's self-aware, right?
It is. Mm-hmm. It's a deconstruction. Yeah. It's as much a deconstruction as like The Watchmen is a deconstruction.
This is like the happy Watchmen.
It is.
Yeah.
Oh, it's very much.
Domesticated Watchmen.
I love your idea of saying, okay, I've got a midpoint. Not just write one, write 6, 7,
right.
8 versions of the possible things that could happen. Because I think you're right. I think a lot of people, they just, it's sort of like a performance in a film, right? An actor comes and they're like, I'm going to say it this way. And then the director says, well, why don't you try it that way? And you have the actors who go like, no, I just want to do it this one way. This is what I want to do. But if you challenge yourself to like try alternate versions of what you're trying to do, it ultimately ends up with something more interesting that we haven't seen and that you haven't seen, like, thought of putting out there before.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm a big proponent of lists. So me I like too. To make lists. I like to, like, before I go into a project, I like to say, what are all the gags I can think of for this story?
The premise building.
Do you guys feel, we're still talking about number 12, right?
Yep.
Yep.
Would, like, The Incredibles, this is not an insult in any way, but The Incredibles to me feels so straightforwardly effortless. I would never think of number 12 directly for The Incredibles because it's so on the surface, straightforward, self-aware, kind of everything I would expect a perfect superhero breakdown to be.
Well,
does that make sense?
Yeah.
Like, I don't think it's weird in any way or like off the cuff or...
Though, I'll just give an example.
I don't know if I'm not putting it right.
They had a different villain in the first animatic. Okay. Syndrome wasn't the villain.
It wasn't the villain. Okay. Yeah,
they had like a different villain and Syndrome was in there and they realized everybody was responding to Syndrome. So then they turned him into a villain. So it's a good example and they got a better story out of it.
Yeah.
That's
a huge deal.
He's the flavor of the movie.
Oh yeah.
He gives the movie more, like the family's great, but cause their story is basic in like, you know, exceptional circumstances. Whereas he actually is kind of the theme of the movie to me in a weird way, or the second theme of the movie.
Gotcha.
You know, the whole fandom,
the premise of fandom,
an obsession and all that. Right. He's actually what gives the movie spice.
Yeah.
Ah, that's a good point.
Whereas the rest of the movie,
it's pretty traditional.
I want to say in the least insulting way, it's obvious.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like in a good way. Yeah, it's just all very obvious. So when you're saying the fifth or sixth or seventh idea, I feel like that doesn't apply to everything in The Incredibles. Like this, out of all the Pixar movies, this is to me oddly the least odd, the least weird. Does that make sense?
I get what you're saying, but I actually think like I'll compare it to to somebody who doesn't work for Pixar. Right? If I were to get this script from someone who was trying to learn the process. Everything that would all of the forward momentum of the story would be successes, right? But if you watch this movie, they fuck up every single thing they're trying to do. Nothing ever goes smoothly. Like when Helen breaks into the place, she gets stuck in the doors, and like they do everything wrong.
I agree with you.
But I'm saying like
I was talking conceptually, not story wise.
Okay, interesting.
I was talking about the concept
conceptually
design wise, the characters. Bumps. That's what I meant. I don't want you to think I meant story-wise.
I understand.
Yeah, that's what I meant.
Well, okay. Story-wise, I completely can see that. Though, again, I think there were major changes, like with the Syndrome thing, and there were all kinds of changes.
Who was the original villain?
I can't remember his name. It's online. What was his deal? I vaguely remember.
Oh, okay.
It's out there, though. I mean, they did a whole animatic pass with the old villain.
Oh, okay.
So it's out there.
Was it still Jason Lee?
Well, Syndrome was a character. He just wasn't the main villain. So
he was in there, is what he was saying.
Yeah.
Everybody was responding. He said everybody was responding so well to him that they cut the villain
and refocused
the whole story
And while some things...
Maybe that's where the prologue came from.
It could be.
Yeah.
And while some things, the story might be the thing that needs the third, the fourth, the fifth. Sometimes it's just the story beats.
The moments.
The moments. It's the gags.
No, I'm on board with that. It was more just conceptually to me. Yeah. The Incredibles seems extremely straightforward.
From a story standpoint. From a conceptual standpoint.
Yeah.
But I like, you were going to the list and we kind of got off the topic. You were talking about lists and I'm a big fan of lists too.
No, I mean, that's really all. I like to do lists all the time for gags and things like what are the five gags. In fact, I think it's a good writer's block tool. If you do get blocked, just force yourself to write as many as possible, but try not to worry about being good.
It doesn't matter.
And actually get a little crazy, like do the worst version, do the funniest version, do the version that doesn't belong in the movie, and some of those might actually be cool.
Because how I imagine, so you know, I'm not in the Pixar room, but how I imagine the approach going was, for instance, let's take the Helen trying to infiltrate the headquarters and rescue Bob, right?
Right.
How I imagine it is, how can we show her fucking up?
Right.
Like, how can this go wrong? And there was a big ass list and a discussion of all the ways they could use her powers, but all of it goes comically wrong, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. And if you watch
Like her getting stuck in the doors all that stuff. Yeah.
That was like an intense, probably an intense process of going through the second, the third, the fourth, the fifth, until they focused upon this big loss and figured out which one was like the most interesting that we'd never seen before, you know? And it's just a perfect example of
also working with power sets we've seen before.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah, they have
interesting
to.
And different.
If you don't dig, we've just seen everything.
Yeah, find the cliche, throw it away. That's,
right.
You know, I like the rhymes.
Well, I mean, the whole movie is essentially a play on Fantastic Four.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
it's a great one.
It's the best Fantastic Four.
It is the best Fantastic
right.
Four. But
what's the next rule we want to talk about? Unless you guys have something else on 12.
No, do you think we talked about that?
Yeah, I think that's good. There is another rule. I'll just. Tag to that is I think there's when you're stuck, make a list of what wouldn't happen. And again, it's lists. I think keeping your mind active is just a good way to, you know, keep the dialogue going. That's the one thing. And when I'm, especially when I'm working with collaborators, it is number nine.
Okay.
When I work with collaborators or if I'm in like a kind of writer's room scenario, just keep talking. That's the thing.
Yeah.
You just, no matter how you approach it, if you're going to get silly, if you're going to get weird, just keep talking. And I think that's another way to kind of approach that.
Yeah, we do the idea books, Chris and I.
Oh, that's good. Yeah. That's good.
What's the next one you want to talk about?
I'm trying to find it. There were some theme-related ones.
We can talk about number three is trying for theme is important, but you won't see what the story is actually about until you're at the end of it.
Okay. And then...
I think that was actually my favorite one out of all 22.
Oh, yeah, it's a funny one, though.
It's great.
It just makes... It's most practical out of all of them for me.
Yeah.
You kind of get to the end, and then you kind of see what your brain did.
Yeah,
in a weird
exactly.
way.
I always look at... I was saying this earlier off recording. I always look at what the success is that the characters achieve and what that says. That's how. And then I work backwards.
Yeah. It's that one. And then there's, I'm trying to find it. Sorry. There's another one that said, something along the lines of do what you're interested in.
Oh, why must you tell this story?
Why must you tell this?
All right.
Number
14. Number 14 is why must you tell this story?
I have them all out of order and I can't find the one I want. So that was the one. So I'm going to combine those two a little bit. Because I think the interesting thing that you find is Brad Bird did this movie, right? And it's a superhero movie, but what is it really about? The cool part is it's kind of a guy having a midlife crisis. It's his family. And that's where Brad Bird was, I guess, when he made the movie. I don't know if that's where he personally was at, but he was around that age.
Yeah.
And he really wrote an adult story. I mean, he wrote a story about a guy having a midlife crisis, essentially. And how his wife reacts and how his family, you know, reacts and all that kind of stuff. So his theme is based on that. And I guess we could talk a little
also,
bit about his theme.
Can I throw this out there? Sure. I feel like this movie in a weird way is a really good play on infidelity.
Yeah.
Yes.
It reads to me, even 14 years ago, it didn't really read to me like that. But reading watching it now, it had that whole like,
definitely.
He's cheating on her.
He's cheating on her.
And he's feeling young again.
Yeah.
And, you know,
It mirrors all of those things. But another thing, and they went on, they actually said this about the creative decision to tell this story is Pixar in general, the irony that now Disney is such a bigger entity than it was back then, you know, and Pixar didn't used to be owned by Disney, but I think it is now.
That's right.
But when they made Incredibles, it wasn't.
Yeah.
So
Disney always distributed their films.
Right.
They didn't own
them, but now they do.
Right.
But when they made
they
it,
everything.
They own everything. I know, but there's some dramatic irony there that.
Yeah.
So they said that the reason that they were driven to tell this story in the way that they did is Pixar's mantra at that time was to go against the societal and like the corporate desire to make people have a 9-to-5 job and to like silence the voices of the creative, like the special versus the mediocre. That was like one of the things that made them decide to tell this story because they felt they could do it through superheroes.
Dash's story is his whole arc is that story right
there.
Well,
and Bob being stuck at a
desk.
And
Bob, yeah, you're right.
So they talked about that being driving them to tell this story. Yeah. So
yeah.
It's perfect.
Yeah, and I think...
not now, though.
Yeah. Well, now, it's weird. It's a different world.
Now.
Yeah.
But you find a lot of movies that have the theme, the character arc is dad needs to care less about work and more about the family. Like, yeah, that's a very, very common.
Yeah.
And I think it's because up until this point in time, a lot of middle-aged white male guys with jobs wrote movies. So it's kind of like,
that's a good point.
Yeah, there's a lot of guilt in there.
You're just sharing.
It's a very common.
But this movie doesn't really play. I don't feel like that there's a neglect arc in there of the
film. No.
As much.
What's your standard, Jamie? There's two types of arcs when it comes down to it.
It was funny. I was just trying to think of what that was.
You learn to work with others and learn confidence. It's pretty much what this movie is.
Learn to care more or learn to be confident or something like that. I can't
Jamie
remember.
Can't even remember his own,
own thing. You taught us.
When he said it in the past, I've been like, God, that's so simple.
The student becomes the master.
It's so funny though that you said that, because it's just sitting here trying to be like, what was that exactly?
I heard you.
Dude. Couldn't remember exactly. But I think it's learn to care more, or
I think it's you extended it to three, and it was learn to have confidence, learn to work with others, and learn to care more.
Okay.
I think that was the three, and all three of them are relevant.
Learn to work with the others might have been the one we threw in there.
Okay.
But which is what this theme is. Well, why don't we talk, you know, since we're in the theme territory.
I mean,
this theme's pretty obvious.
It's pretty obvious.
And they nail it right in the thing. It's amazing how they nail it. Like, in the wedding scene, that whole I do beat, which kind of, it hints at everything. And then later on, she says, what does she say to him? It's at the I do beat. You have to be more than Mr. Incredible.
He says to her, you have to be more flexible.
And you have to be more flexible.
Yeah. Waka waka. It's a great line.
But it's so subtle.
Yeah, it's great.
And it's another one of those.
That's their
story. Don't do the first draft. Do that. Because that's not a first draft.
Absolutely not.
That's like
that's a polish.
That's the one you find on second, third, or fourth.
Oh, shit. Foreshadowing. Yeah.
It's good stuff.
Those moments when you.
I'd say the final arc, like the after the All Is Lost, before the third act, that's a little more like you'd get on your second draft, which is which when she finally confronts him.
Yeah.
And
I agree.
Yeah.
And it's less.
It's very on the nose.
Yeah, very on the nose. Yeah. If we work together, you won't have to. Yeah. He says, I'm not strong enough to lose you. And she says, if we work together, you won't have to.
And really, that's the theme
that's
of the
theme.
Whole piece.
Family,
you know, compromise, work together.
Yeah.
You can have both worlds if you compromise.
Yeah,
which compromise. Is kind of theme in general.
Yeah,
that's generally the way themes.
It's a good
work.
Point. Yeah, but it's a very good movie to watch for how they explore theme and, you know, express it through the dialogue and the actions and the failures and victories, and also the opposition of Syndrome working against everybody by himself. You know, he's like a one man, even though he has the assistant who ends up being on the good side of things.
That's true.
Syndrome is the, I mean, that's Pixar always does this. The antagonist should be the opposing theme, you know.
Yeah. And the cool thing about
he's driven by he wants to be, it's for him.
Yeah,
they hit, like, Frozone and Mr. Incredible are like obsessed with saving humans.
If you
look at what Syndrome's ultimate downfall is, it speaks right to the theme. Like, the one thing he does that, in my opinion, turned everything. Like, if he didn't do this one thing, he would have won the day. And that was when he was going to let Mirage die.
Yeah.
So he went against his family
and
was in it for self. Like, I don't care about her. I'm in it for myself. You can kill my
family.
That was
the turn. Yeah. That was like,
and that's what failed.
The kiss of
death. And then she looked at him and was like, you're not my family. Yeah. You know, you're
and then
my,
she releases Mr. Family. Incredible.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah.
Yep. So that was kind of her downfall. It's directly related to theme as Syndrome's own selfishness.
Yeah. But it's a good instructive thing to say that when you're thinking about theme, you also want to think about the villain, what the villain and how you can make the villain express the opposing theme and all of their little victories proving that opposing theme. You should work for yourself and no one else. Like,
right.
Every time he gets one up on the Incredibles, that's essentially what's being said.
Even to the point where the character's powers kind of reflect their thematic or their arcs.
Right.
Shy Violet likes to turn herself
invisible.
And see, you're saying it that way, but it works so well.
No, it works.
Like, you know,
I'm saying it was so on the nose.
Yeah,
it almost hurts.
Yeah, but they make it work.
They make
dude.
It work. Yeah, they totally make it work.
And you know, at some point, you have to make these decisions. So theme is good DNA to use.
Definitely.
Decisions.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I also, this is, when I watched it again yesterday, I read Syndrome as like the opposite of the theme of Spider-Man.
Interesting.
I mean, in the end, I was like, Syndrome is incredibly powerful. He's in, you know, is a genius.
No responsibility.
He has no responsibility. Yeah. Like, yeah, I just read that.
With great power comes no responsibility.
I haven't rewatched this movie in a long time. That's awesome. The infidelity thing read to me.
Oh, yeah, there's definitely
a lot of new stuff I picked up.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
Fanboy side of things, the commentary on fanboys, well, I didn't pick up on.
We could talk about that for hours. Yeah.
Not on this
Imagine
one,
Syndrome but... and the Last Jedi, you know? Right. Is there any more of the rules you guys want to talk about?
Yeah, well, so we didn't talk about, this is the longest one, but we don't have to talk at length.
Which number is it? Rule number one.
And this is the fairy tale thing, right, Jamie?
Yeah, like, yeah.
It's not just for Pixar. But...
No, not at all. And I've seen this in many places. And yeah. I think it's a great way. I show this when I teach screenwriting. I show this to my students. And almost always, they're very attracted to this little, this little plan.
Read it.
Okay. Yeah,
read it.
Once upon a time, there was every day, blank, one day, blank, because of that, blank, because of that, blank, until finally, blank.
Right. Yeah. And there's a couple things going on here with that. First of all, if you ever see that South Park video, in the video is that one where they say there's one rule of screenwriting that we learned, and it's instead of...
Therefore, they list all the bits.
You, yeah. If you Google
causation.
It, put Google South and Park writers and screenwriters.
Oh, it's fantastic.
You don't say, and then... You say, and therefore.
Therefore.
Yeah, you should say, therefore.
Yeah, or because of.
Because of and therefore. Yeah.
And that's what this forces you to do. This forces you to put your story into those terms. So it's not just a bunch of random events.
Yeah.
It's not like Mr. Incredible fought, you know, Syndrome. Yeah. Mr. Incredible fought this guy. You know, Mr.
Right.
It's forcing you to tell a story. It's forcing you to set up dominoes that you're going to knock down in your story. So this is a really simple way. If you hate all the other things, if you hate Blake Snyder's beat sheet, if you hate Truby, if you hate all those things, this is a simple way you could sit down right now and probably within 30 minutes, come up with some structure for your thing.
Yeah.
I actually have used
number four.
That's what this one is.
This is number four.
Number four.
Yeah, oh, I thought we were talking about number one.
Yeah, no, this is number four.
Okay.
So number four, it's a very simple way. It's a very simple structure. You'll find it out there. It's fill in the blank. It's like a Mad Lib.
Yeah.
And give it a try. And I've actually seen it work with The Godfather and very complex, you know, forms just to break it down.
Can we fill it out?
Yeah. So I'll kind of break it down a little more, and then we can go into The Incredibles depending on how much you want to go into it. But just a little expansion upon each one. So once upon a time is your setup. It establishes everything the audience needs to know about the realities of the world of your story. So like the rules of the world and the characters who inhabit it, right?
The prologue, right? For this is the prologue.
Yeah. And every day it supports the setup.
Yep.
So it's just an extension of what
you
said.
The ordinary life.
The patterns in the character's world.
Right. And then I usually hear the next one say, until one day. They just put one day in this.
I actually wrote until one day. I have heard it that way too. And it could be either or, in my opinion, the inciting incident happens, or it could be the point of no return, which is like the end of Act One, like Luke and all of his aunt dying and stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, that's less of an inciting incident and more of the turning point.
Sure.
Until one day Luke's aunt and uncle were dead, and what else could he do? An inciting incident or point of no return happens that requires action, right? So it requires that they do something to move the story forward. And because of this, so now you're into Act Two.
Right.
So that's all Act One stuff. Okay. Now you're into Act Two. And because of this, and then Act Two is split by this setup, by rule number four, it's split into two sections. Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. So the first section is.
And by the way, usually when I see this, it could be many because of.
Oh,
that.
It could be. It could be because of. Yeah, I mean, that could be every fucking scene.
Just because it says two here, you can use 10.
You could write your whole Act Two based on.
How many because of that does The Incredible have?
It just depends on how deep you want to dive.
Yeah, okay. I mean,
yeah, you could just you could either summarize it like a because of that he goes on a mission, or you
right,
could,
yeah, yeah,
okay, you can go in there, yeah, you break it down even
and
further.
Then okay, right. And because of this, the reaction and consequences of reacting to the inciting incident,
mm-hmm,
or point of no return. And because of this, the reaction and consequences of, like you said, an endless number of events, mm-hmm, or you can just break it down simply into two if you're trying to like write a synopsis and grow from there. And then the last one is until finally kind of like covers the whole third act. Yeah, that's the climax, right? Yeah,
right.
And then
the 1 point climax.
Right. It's just finally, like the save the cat. Yeah, yeah, we're mixing terms here, but
until finally the Death Star was destroyed by Luke Skywalker.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Exactly.
Okay.
And ever since that day, and that's the denouement, which a lot of beginning writers don't do the denouement.
Yeah. Yeah, some people want to end it right at the thing, and sometimes that's okay.
Yeah, that's okay.
I feel like a lot of movies do end until finally.
Yeah,
it happens. Credits roll.
Yeah,
hard rock song starts playing.
The denouement is the curtain. Everybody bows. That's the denouement. You get one last moment to see what everybody's up to now that everything's right in the world, or the opposite in a down ending story. What's everything wrong? Like Requiem for a Dream. Their denouement is like so depressing, you know.
You could have like almost a mix of that, like with Die Hard.
Yeah, that's a good call.
There's kind of a denouement, but there's also like the end of the story. Yeah. You know, so,
sometimes the ever since that day more hints like what the future that we never see
that's
is going to be.
That's right. You know, that's true.
Like John McClane and his wife lived happily ever after.
Yeah, even like in the credits of Can't Hardly Wait, where they have the yearbook thing. This person did that.
Once again, I'll mention it. Wayne's World.
Yeah.
On this podcast, I mentioned Wayne's World way too often. We could actually show other ending.
Yeah, that's
right. I don't know how much you want to go into, how in depth you want to go into the Incredibles.
I think we could do a simple one.
A very simple one.
Yeah, you know? Yeah.
Just
so
keep the because of that's down to like below five.
Yeah. So yeah. Once upon a time, and this is the prologue.
Yes.
And it's also the. That's probably just Upon a Time is the prologue, right?
There was a superhero in a world full of superheroes named Mr. Incredible.
Here's the interesting thing. Like, if I did it, I'd probably skip the prologue, which tells me it's a prologue. You know what I mean? So if I was breaking the story, I'd probably be once upon a time there was a family of superheroes who hid their powers from the world.
Jamie, I think they need the prologue for Syndrome. I think after what you told me, I feel like that exists for Syndrome.
I agree.
That has to cut.
And it grew out of
because he's not
deciding.
In like Act Two that much at all.
But again, this because this is a summary, we're hiding a lot of the details.
That's my point.
In theory, with what I'm gonna pitch, you could hide Syndrome somewhere else. You could set Syndrome.
Right. I agree with
you. He could show up one day and say, "You're Mr. Incredible, and I love you." You could do a different thing.
But I think it came to a point where they.
I agree with you. I think there is a version of this movie that you can imagine that cuts the prologue, and the one thing that you have to figure out that you have to put somewhere is Syndrome.
Yeah,
I'm not saying it'd be better.
The thing with the prologue though is good is there's a lot of time in between. You need Syndrome to go away and have time to go insane, or else it doesn't really work, you know?
No.
And if you start with, like, them already being a family, how could he be a child that's obsessed with Mr. Incredible?
Right.
Yeah.
There are a lot of ways, bad ways you could patch it. You could have, like, a flashback type thing, or footage, or videos, or blah, blah, blah. You know, I used to be a fan of yours, you know, monologuing. There are bad ways.
He shows up as like a friend and he's been obsessed with him since.
Yeah. Exactly.
I'm not saying that would be better.
This is probably the
cleanest
of those options.
Yeah.
It's just adding this little prologue.
Because they're brilliant.
Also, it's world building.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
It builds gives
world. Us. So the only thing I'm saying is my alternative approach will be I'm cutting the prologue and I'm saying there was a family of superheroes who hid their
superpowers. Who are you to question Pixar? Right.
The before world.
If I was in the brain trust, the prologue would be done.
Which I should be.
Exactly. I would have said, take your Woody Woodpecker. And
now there's a great movie. No.
So anyway, it was a family of superheroes who hid their powers from the world and tried to maintain an ordinary life.
All right. Something like that. And every day.
Well, they didn't just hide. It was legal. They were forced to hide.
They were forced to.
I think forced is an important part of this.
That's in there.
Again, I'm not trying to.
He's breaking a basic.
I'm sorry.
This is what I would be writing if the movie didn't exist.
Yeah.
You're right.
Okay. So, and every day.
And every day, why don't I have
Bob works a boring insurance job.
Exactly.
Helen struggles to balance taking care of the house and the kids
being
while
a mom,
Bob
mom
being
and a, wife
a mom and a wife yeah. while Bob is off having a midlife crisis.
The yep, teenage girl here. Feels invisible and the boy
Dash,
feels restless.
Dash uses his powers for bad instead of good.
Yeah.
Because he is not allowed to be himself.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Until one day.
And I actually think this is the inciting incident and it comes late as shit in this movie.
I probably agree.
31 minutes.
Yeah.
Bob finds, which is really late,
yeah,
but it works so well.
Again, partially because of the prologue.
The prologue's 14 minutes. Yep. So there you go.
Some great movies don't follow structure.
I know. That's what. That's why this is a great example.
If I may point to another example.
It's rock solid still.
Another example structure. That I actually know the time marker. In Rocky, he doesn't get challenged until 55 minutes in.
Dude, that's insane.
Right?
So
I mean,
yeah.
You don't always have to.
No, that's why this is a great example. So until one day, Bob finds a mysterious package and is offered a job that will allow him to potentially be Mr. Incredible again, use his superpowers
and get paid.
Get paid and relive the good old days, which that's all he's about. Yeah.
Right. And because of that, in my version, I did the real skimpy version where because of that, he goes on the mission and gets captured.
You know what? That's what happened. Brings
that
it down, man.
That's the midpoint.
Yeah. Did you write a novel of this stuff?
No, I just broke down the beats.
Oh, okay.
Like you did the same.
It's a beats. Yeah. I just broke down every beat. No
straight
deal.
A student, Jimmy George.
Dude. Yeah, that's deconstructing. Is dude, I'm passionate.
I know. Yeah,
that's what you do. That's one of the rules, actually.
Yeah.
No, so it's a two-part midpoint.
Yeah.
So it's Helen calls Bob and finds out that he's been lying to her and he has been working there for a long time.
That's right.
And then Bob finds out that it's weird to say Bob because you're sitting across from me.
The guy.
Bob finds out Syndrome's grandmaster plan that he's been killing superheroes to build the perfect robot. And and then he gets captured.
Yeah. Yep. And I mean, again, my version's very simple, sticking to Mr. Incredible's POV. But
yeah,
it just goes, and because of that, his family has to come together and use their powers to save him.
Yeah. That's no, saying. That's
yeah. You're
that's,
going broad
that's,
strokes.
No, but
yeah,
that's
broad,
that,
yeah.
that's the whole second part of Act Two.
Yeah.
Like yeah,
yeah
definitely. That's what it's all about.
It's the high level version that you might want to come up with, like I said, in 10 minutes after you read this.
Yeah,
for your info.
Exactly.
Until finally the family learns to compromise, use their powers, but still maintain their ordinary life. And ever since that day, they live together as both superheroes and a family. Or
yeah,
something like that.
Exactly.
And Dash can play sports.
Yeah, Dash
and she can
is
be
allowed
seen
to be himself.
Yeah.
Until
she's flexible.
Right.
And Bob has learned to be not just strong, but also a father. And a husband.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
There you go.
Let me ask you guys this. That's
where we're at.
That's
yeah,
where
man.
Okay.
At.
Now, there's one question I want to ask you guys, because this is the only thing that I really thought about when I was watching the movie.
Okay.
What role, structurally and even character-wise, does Frozone play? Because he's the only thing, from doing this podcast and thinking about this and rewatching the movie, I love Frozone. Who doesn't?
Right.
But I kind of... Other than him being buddy-buddy with Bob and going out...
I think that's what it
is,
though. Is
that the only...
It
yeah,
shows
is that...
what happens when he works with others, the people that he cares about.
You think? Is,
yeah.
I don't know if that was the
yeah.
theme of those scenes, but okay.
Yeah, it's it shows, like, yeah.
Really?
I
okay.
Yeah.
I question that, but...
Yeah, I don't know. I think
Jamie,
so.
Do you...
I don't know.
I'm
throwing it at you guys because it was something that occurred to me.
Yeah, it's a good question. I think Frozone
in the
also,
end battle he really doesn't do
he
much.
He doesn't do much.
Yeah.
Because you don't want him at that point. You want the family. There's enough with the family.
Yeah.
I think he represents like a different reaction to that situation with his wife. Like, you know how he's
the super suit.
Yeah,
thing.
Yeah. I think
yeah.
he's a different side of how Bob could have reacted. Like maybe he's the opposite side of how Bob could have reacted. Like only listening to the wife, only, you know, or whatever. Because
he doesn't want
to
relive.
But he's not listening
days.
To his wife. He's out there doing it with
he is,
Bob.
But he's scared about it. And he
yeah,
wants to go
he's
home
not the
and,
same.
But so is Bob.
Not the same. He's not driven by personal desire to be the man he once was. He's driven by I just want to help people.
If I'm remembering correctly,
well, so I think you don't think Bob is too.
Bob is trying to.
He's deeper. Trying to recapture, but he also cares.
But
yeah.
See,
okay.
I remember Frozen as
I'm playing devil's advocate a little.
I love that when you do that.
It's been a while, but I remember Frozen as more the dissenting opinion. Like, what if we just went bowling? Bowling's
that, yeah,
fun.
He does say that. He does say he's
so
kind of.
I got a feeling that he was dragged out by Mr. Incredible, mm-hmm. that he really wanted to go.
Yeah, exactly.
That was my take on
yeah.
it.
Yes, and he does play that like small role. I guess when I was rewatching the movie, he was the only part I was like, you could probably.
He's a window character. Have you ever heard that phrase?
Yeah. You could probably cut Frozone out and it'd still be a great movie. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Even though Frozone's awesome, and I wouldn't want to lose Frozone, you know?
Yeah. But it allows the audience, I think you're right.
It also gives Bob someone else to be with.
Yeah, other than his family.
Other than his family.
Well,
like,
that's a very good point, because he's having a secret life.
And he needs somebody to be secret
with.
You
need to express that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a good point.
It's kind of weird that Frozone is almost with him on the journey.
Yeah, no, I know.
Like, that, I think,
it could have gone there.
Like Frozone gets captured with him. And kind of. But then it
would
be. Look
what you got me into.
It'd be more impersonal and about the two of them than, I guess.
It'd become a buddy movie,
You'd probably have to bring his wife into it.
She'd have
more
to be an actual character. It'd be a little bit busier.
It just complicates it.
That might have been talked about. If they were as intense in those think tanks.
Absolutely.
Has to have been talked
about. There's 45 minutes of deleted scenes.
Yeah, that has to have been part of it.
45 minutes.
I would love to watch them just to see if there's any Frozone discussion.
Even the animatics, the cut animatics are entertaining.
Yeah.
So I could see watching the full 45 minutes of Frozone or whatever it is.
That's fine. Yeah.
I think we covered everything.
Yeah, I was going to say, you guys talked about all the rules
that
you
wanted
that
to
you
talk about.
That
we felt
about.
Like they were worth it. We skipped about 18.
Yeah, there's a lot of rules. Go read the rules. They're
all
good.
I'll
put a link
good.
On the episode page. So if you go to thundergrunt.com, find this episode, there'll be a link to one of the pages that lists these tweets. They're tweets.
Tools, not rules.
There's even YouTube videos.
There's YouTube videos that explain it very well and everything.
With examples. And mm-hmm. definitely. Yeah.
Is there any...
And the Michael Arndt, that's worth talking about.
Oh, yeah, that's right. There's a Michael Arndt video that's like Pixar's rules for good beginnings.
He made it.
That he came up with. There's also another Michael Arndt video going around right now that's Michael Arndt's rules for good endings, which he's kind of infamous for. He came up with this lecture that's really good. If you can find it, it's on Vimeo.
Yeah, look those up. They're very instructive.
Is there anything else you guys want to say about Brad's Bird's almost flawless screenplay?
There's one. Let me see if I can find it. There's one last rule that I think sums this one up good. It's... And I can't find why there's too many of these rules. Today I'm 22.
22 is a weird number too. It just is. Just
blame
boil it
the
down
tweeter.
To 20. I do. That's why I think if Pixar was going to release them, they would have done 20 or probably 10.
Yeah, 22 is. Just
it seems
crazy.
Like you know what's funny is it seems like the list itself wasn't workshopped.
No, I know.
Well, the funny thing was it was written by an editor who didn't edit.
Oh, I know. Yeah,
that's funny. So,
but, there's one, and now I can't find it. But it's,
Bob, what do you want to talk about while Jamie's looking?
I found it. Number 10, pull apart the stories you like. What you like in them is a part of you. You've got to recognize it before you can use it. So that's what we do.
Yeah,
so
that's,
I think
that's
like our mission statement.
Ethereal, isn't it? Almost, it sounds like a therapy session.
So a lot of screenwriters will say that the only way to learn screenwriting isn't through the stuff we talk about here, but to just go through movies, break them down. A lot of people, you know, back in the day when there wasn't an internet and there wasn't all these Save the Cat books and things like that, they literally just went through and watched television shows, they watched movies, and they wrote the beats on a piece of paper. And they thought about them. There's a whole host of people that have done that.
Say Tarantino. I didn't go to film school. I went to films.
So go take the movies you love. Write it down. Try to crack what you love about
them. Why do you like them?
How they work. What they're doing. And that's really the
fight
best
scenes.
The like my dad. I don't watch movies for characters.
Yeah. We're putting big words around. Or not big words. But we're putting canned words around basically doing that.
Yeah.
So go do that.
Yeah. Steal.
Steal.
Steal from your heroes.
Steal.
That's the lesson we've learned.
Yeah. Watch Bugs Bunny cartoons.
right.
And don't write an animated
don't
write an
What's the actual lesson we learned?
I learned that it's probably not a good idea to aspire to write feature-length animated films.
That sounds
I learned I have to write down those two character arc things that I couldn't remember.
Yeah, dude. Those are fantastic.
And I learned that I need to respect Frozone more.
Yeah.
I love Frozone. That's fine. All right. I think, I mean, there's really nothing else we can say. I mean.
Yeah. Thanks for listening, guys.
Thank you for listening.
Picked its bones.
Yeah.
The Incredibles 2 is in theaters now, and it needs your help. It's struggling.
Yeah, it's really struggling.
We need to complete the trilogy.
Oh,
yeah, right, right. Show them we care. Together, we can do it. We can succeed as a family of fans. All right. Bye.
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 You have just listened to Writer's Blockbusters, a screenwriting podcast featuring two professionals and another guy. Available only on Thundergrunt.